Today's daf in Mesechet Yevamot is the very end daf, daf kuf, chof, beit, and we are holding at the Halakha Mishnah, and we will introduce it because of the special circumstances with the Halakha Talisker. Get for it. So we continue to describe what type of edus is acceptable and what type of identification is acceptable. As you can see, there's been a tremendous amount of development in this area, right? I mean, this is like one of the few times where the Gemara actually, even the Mishnah, actually gives us some insight into the historical development of the issues over here, because it's clear that Lechatchila, remember, they didn't want to rely on edus of an Eid Echad, and how that evolved to rely on the woman's own testimony. I'm not sure if it's that order, we're going to see today. And the question about whether it's Eid Mipi Eid, is it apostle Eid, and then the different levels of identification that we were willing to accept. And all of this is an indication of the gradual extent of the development of the need for the heter of agunais. And as we saw yesterday, we do whatever we possibly can. I mean, at least the way we understood the mice with Rabbi Gamliel. And remember, we're talking about over here, he actually took a shvua, right? Which was like, why do you take a shvua? I mean, how do you take a shvua on a suffix? We didn't even talk about that yesterday. But I mean, like, what's he talking about? The story about Chassus, we had the Maisa with taking a Shvua, and he says, oh my God, poor Chassa has turned into fish food. This is Rav Nachman. He actually used the lotion of Elohim. It's the lotion of Shvua. How do you go make a Shvua on something like that? So again, it's clear that there's totally different levels of Ne'emonis in terms of the Halacha when it comes to making a Shvua. Then the person has every right to believe the rov that he's being samech on, and so on and so forth. And that's fine. All of these are chumras in terms of the question of the chazak avashish, where we're willing to be matir, and so on. This opened up the whole tchum for us of how it is that we can be machmer in certain ways, mekel in other ways, especially the interrelationship of the tzara's testimony vis-a-vis yourself and vis-a-vis the other tzara. These are very mind-opening issues, benogea, rov, chazaka, nemonis of edus, the diraisa of edus, being semech in terms of different halachas, the difference between yibum and chalitza on the one hand, and the nemonis of eshes ish on the other hand, and so on. Fantastically rich sugyas that give us inyanim for all over Shas in these issues, including all the other things that we spoke about, and Migo, Pesha Asra, Pesha Hiter, and many of the other inyanim that were raised. And so, in light of that, we also saw the development of how easy are we about the identification? Like, what will be a proper identification? And that is now what the Mishnah wants to talk about. What type of lighting do you need for identification? Because it's clear that in different type of lighting, we're very sensitive to that today, you know, so we can adjust the frequency of the light so that we can actually read in certain light, and look outside another light, and so on. What is considered to be proper lighting for the identification of a body? So the Mishnah begins with saying, Me'idim l'ora ner ul'ora levana. You're allowed to actually use any light. You could even use artificial light, which in those days, of course, was a candle, which is a very different type of light. That's okay. You can use moonlight. And here is like the biggest kula that we've really spoken about until now. We've spoken about the funeral of the kids that might have been an aunt, and the only way we don't know it's an aunt is they gave too many details about the rabbonim that gave the hesped. So we don't imagine that their imagination is that sophisticated. But here the question is, you hear a voice, a disembodied voice. You have no idea where this voice is coming from, you see. And according to some, the Chiddush is, it's not even a direct voice, it's an echo of a voice. So, I mean, this is already not, you talk about aid me pi aid, this is sound me pi sound, right? So you can even use a bat kol in order to be matir someone. And in fact, there was a ma'aseh b'chachamad al rosh ahar. Somebody got up and stood on a mountaintop. I have absolutely no idea who it is, what he's talking about, and what's going on. But there he was, and he shouts out, Ish ploni ben ploni mimokum ploni mate. Now, they went over there to try to get the guy and find out what's going on. Or was anybody there? Was he talking about having just found the body? And nothing, nothing. Nobody's there. No body is there. No signs of anything. So some say, indeed, maybe this is mamash bat kol, right? No, didn't matter. He see you at ishto. They went and they accepted that as a basis for marrying his wife off to someone else. So this is quite incredible. No identification, no basis for what this kind of thing is, and it was okay. And there was another maaseh in Salmon, where we hear somebody shouting and saying, I am X, the son of Y. I have been bit by a poisonous snake and I have 15 minutes to live. Anybody who hears me, please write It's anybody who hears me, please inform my wife that I'm dead and that she can go and get married. So be'echad shamar ani ish ploni ben ish ploni neshachani nachash v'arei ani mate. And then they came and they found the body, but the body was completely deformed because of the impact of the bites. And ochu v'loi kiru, they could not identify the body because he was like completely changed. And nonetheless, on the basis of his own testimony that he's dead. Now, this is like the ultimate, right? The testimony is the dead man, and he testified that he's dead. And on that basis, they were matir his wife, ahochu v'isiu et ishto. Oh, my Rabbi Bar Shmuel, but it says in a braita that Beit Shammai omrim, ein masi'in al pi bat kol, u'Beit Hillel omrim, masi'in al pi bat kol. Okay, so what's the point? I mean, anyway, the halakha is like Beit Hillel. The Mishnah, we have a Stam Mishnah that said that may see Enoch be based. What do I need Rabbi Bar Shmuel to tell me this? I don't get it. My Kamashmuel. I mean, that's what the Mishnah said. What I need to know, whether there was initially a Machlokas, Beit Shammai, Beit Hillel, about the issue. No, but what Rabbi Bar Shmuel wants to make sure is that how about if you will find an indication? Now, we don't know that indication now, okay? Obviously, I mean, there were Bikim and Mishayas. We know whether there is a Mishnah that says otherwise. But suppose there's a diak in the Mishnah that nobody has ever thought of. And it's a Stam Mishnah. And it says clearly, that by implication, of course, that the halacha is otherwise. And we don't rely on a bat kol. So then we would have, what, two stamas? We would know which stam to paskin like. So Rabbi Bar Shmuel wants you to know that in the event that your mishtakeach is stoma, that says, ein masin al pi bat kol, you need to know the basis of that. And all you need to understand is, yes, there is such a shita. However, that shita is the shita of Beit Shammai. And therefore, you don't have to worry about how to paskin. Anyway, the Mishnah says that they went to the top of the mountain and they found no evidence of any mate, they found no evidence of any human presence at all. And therefore, you would think that we can't be Samech on it, Kamash Malan. Asks the Gemara, but how indeed can you be Samech on it? I mean, couldn't it have been a shade? And doesn't it say that if you don't know somebody you meet at night, don't say hello? So if that's the case, how do we know that it wasn't a shade? You know, shades, they call them demons because they really like to make troubles. That's why they're called mazikin. Wouldn't this be a great way to cause trouble? Claim that somebody's dead and then watch the fun when she goes and gets married. Yes, indeed. You can see the demons dancing at the wedding. It's amazing. So how in the world could you be samech on that? No. They saw before, you're right, they heard a voice. We don't know who the voice belonged to, but they did see a human there before, or at least it looked like a human. I mean, looked like a human. I mean, a demon can look like a human. Look how many demons you meet in the street, for heaven's sakes. So obviously, they too are like humans. Inunami domu. No, but they saw a shadow. And you don't call them shading for nothing. So if they cast a shade, then they must not be shades. What do you mean? They're only called shades because they also are cast a shade. So inunami itle bavua, they also have shadows. Ah, but there was a shadow of the shadow. And as we've explained, that much resolution we don't have. So because of that, we know it wasn't a shadow. Well, how do you know? Maybe Shadim also have a bavua de bavua. I mean, how many Shadim have you met and spoken to find out whether this is true? Amar Rabbi Chanina, I spoke to a very big expert. His name is Yonatan Shida, favorite shade of mine. And he explained that bavua itlehu, but bavua de bavua letlehu. And this guy works with Disney or with one of the other, computer graphics. He told me this is the way it goes. So that way we know. Anyway, that's the gears that we have here. In other places, it's Yonatan. It's not the shade. It's his son, but whatever. So, okay, fine. So you're saying it wasn't the shade, but it might have been at Sora. I mean, we know we have five women that are not believed, right? So wouldn't this be a great way for one of those people who want to mess up the other, the mother-in-law? The mother-in-law's got a great idea. She buys one of these voice-modifying things, and she says, Plony ben plony mate. Plony ben plony mate. Anyway, so meanwhile, this girl gets married, and mother-in-law dances all the way to the bank, right? So how do you know it wasn't at Sora? Tana Devei Rabbi Yishmael, look, let me tell you something. If you're going to ask me all of these questions, I'm not going to have any answers, okay? So let's understand something. In the event that we are faced with a last opportunity for a woman to have a life, okay? Now here's you. Okay, here's my last chance for a life. There was this noise coming from the mountaintop which said that so-and-so, my husband, died. So I need to get married again. I'm only 26 years old. You walk in. How do we know it wasn't a shade? How do we know it wasn't your mother-in-law? How do we know? Will you shut up? Basically, when we're talking about the last chance, give me a break. Give her a break. Don't bring up every possible issue, for heaven's sakes. It's different. Bisha'ata sakana. Look, we know that we have a braita that points out that issue. In the event that you've got no other alternatives, okay, so you're in a time of danger. This is the last chance that this guy has to give a get before he goes off to something from which he probably is never going to return. So we do not, in those cases, say, well, do you have positive identification? No. We take advantage and kotvim v'notnim, afal pi she'ein makirin. We don't really know that this is the guy. Nonetheless, he says, this is who I am. That's a beferish mishnah. We hear a voice. Relates to what we said over here. We hear a voice that's coming from the bottom of this deep cistern. The guy's saying, I can't get out of here. Please give a get to my wife. We never know 100% that it's really him. Maybe it's a shade. Whatever you want. The bottom line is, we do it. And we don't say, maybe it was the tzara with a voice modifier. So basically, the same thing is true over here. This is your opportunity. That's the whole point of what we're looking for a heter. 90% of the time, it's okay. That's good enough under such circumstances. And now, a word from our Talisker sponsor.
Wait, don't we have to go to the American Embassy first and get it notarized before we make a declaration?
Exactly. Like that? That's exactly the point. And so now, as we get to the end of the Masechet, the Mishnah wants to clue us in on the way that this gradually evolved. And it was not the halacha initially. So Omar Rabbi Akiva, of course, we talked about this before in a different context slightly, but Omar Rabbi Akiva, I once went down to Narda, and I needed to go there to be able to, when the Romans had ossered anything that had to do with the, you know, Ibur Shana and so on. So I went down there in order to make it a leap year. And I find this guy who's called Nechemia Ish Beit Deli. He said to me, Rabbi, I hear that in Eretz Yisrael, where you come from, the only one that allows a woman to get married on the basis of an Eid Echad is this guy Yehuda ben Bava. Is that true? Nomitilo, and I said to him, I have to tell you, that is actually the fact. Omarli, so this Nechemiah said to me, listen, I need you to go, and Amorlahem Mishmi, now this is, we're going to read the Mishnah the way that the Gemara earlier ended up understanding the Mishnah. Remember, we misunderstood it, Lechatchila, and we thought that he was referring specifically to a time of danger, that we're only then are we miming the Eid Echad. And of course, that would be a direct reference to what we said two lines ago before the Mishnah, which is always the way that the Gemara introduces a Mishnah. At B'Sha'at Sakana, it's different. Gemara came out that that's not the point, and that the Nechemiah was only explaining to Rabbi Akiva, why am I asking you to go and say in my name, which is sort of aid me, be aid, why don't I go myself? I can't go myself. Atem Yodim, Shamidina Mishubeshet Begayasot. Look, the roads are dangerous. There's all kinds of soldiers just wandering about the place, shooting people at random, stealing their clothes, whatever. I can't leave my family under these circumstances. So I've got to ask you to be my shliach and tell them over the following words. Kach mikublani mireb gamliel hazoken shemasi'in et ha'isha al pi eid echad. And when I came back and I said over what I had heard from the Nechemiah, who is this Ish Beit Li, I said it over to Rabbi Gamliel Hazoken's grandson. So I came and said it over. This is Rabbi Gamliel that lives in Barnea's neighborhood, which was Rabbi Gamliel of Yavne. And this was the grandson of Rabbi Gamliel Hazoken. And I said over his own grandfather's words, and he was so happy. So Mach Lidvarai, he said, oh, Baruch Hashem. So Mach Lidvarai V'amar, at last we have a real basis, a chaver to Rabbi Yehuda ben Bava, who's been saying for years that we're allowed to do this. Nobody had any other sources for it. And now we at last we have a right to expand this so that we can all be semech on it. And as he's discussing it, mitocha davar, as he's discussing it, he remembers, nizkar Rebbe Gamliel, that nehargu harugim betel arza. So there were people who had been murdered in this place called Tel Arza, and they had never been matir, the women, to get married, because they only knew about the harugim from an Eid Echad. And now, he's, oh my God, that was 25 years ago. These women still are not married, and now we would really have a right to be matir them. He immediately went, and he was matir them to get married based on that Eid Echad years later. And from that point on, hulchzeku, okay, it's a question about the gears, but the Mishnah said to me, hulchzeku liyot masi'in al pi Eid Echad. That was the turning point where after they did that, so then everybody became aware of the fact that we're ready to be semech on that. Reb Gamliel of Yavne was semech on it, and it became the norm, whereas once upon a time it was cutting edge, and you needed to have a lot of chutzpah to do it and to be semech and to support your opinion and so on. That became the norm. And not only that, but after that, they ended up being even more makel, and they were huzeku liyot mesiin, even aid me pi aid, which is not even kosher aidus at all. And even if it initially it comes from an Eved or an Isha or a Shivcha, we believe it on that basis. And of course, there was the other issue that we had already from the time of Beit Shammai Beit Hillel, where we are believing her al pi atzma because of the whole idea that we make this special takana mitoch chumra shichmarta la besofa, that was already in practice, obviously, because it comes from before this time, way before this time. But this idea of an Eid Echad, that was something that happened later and that gradually became not even to insist on a kosher Eid and not even to insist on the general concept of testimony, but to accept even Eid mipi Eid. And even if you have someone who may be half dead himself, lying back on the couch and unable to hear anything, and he's saying, I'm dead. Don't believe him. He can still arise and awake, as you can see with your own eyes. And that became also accepted. Rabbi Eliezer, Rabbi Yeshua, Omrim, we don't do that. Ein mesi'in et ha'isha al pi eid echad. Now, the truth is that this was from before, okay? Now, even though they were contemporaneous with Yavne, and they were also there together with what you would think would have been after Rabbi Gamliel was matir, it's not true. The Mishnah leaves their din in place over here so that we should actually sense how immediate the change was. So this is one of those Mishnayos that is called Mishnah lo zaza mimakoma, that oftentimes in order either to provide a basis for sometimes where we see an opposite psak to know how it evolved, or for us to understand the history of this psak, that even there in the Beis Din of Yavne, where Rabbi Eliezer and Rabbi Yeshua were together with Rabbi Gamliel of Yavne, they had originally said, we never do that. And then maybe it was just a few weeks later that we have the first part of the Mishnah, which then became the Mishnah Achrona, obviously, and we left the Mishnah Rishona in its place, and we do not allow a testimony from a woman or a shifcha or krovim, unless, of course, that woman is in the middle of Italy and is there to join the Daf Yomi. Now, that's, you know, a special kind of situation, perhaps, but we're happy about an Italian visit. So, in that case, we now understand how this all came about. So, you're telling me that Rabbi Akiva, who says over here that he held you were not allowed to, so he actually said that you cannot allow, and he told this to this Nechemi Ish Beit Eli, that you cannot use the edus of an Isha? But what about the Braisa? Rabbi Shimon ben Elazar Omer Mishum Rabbi Akiva Isha Ne'emenet Lavi Gita Mikal V'chomer. A woman is allowed to bring her own get, obviously, because look, think for yourself. Even the five women or the seven women that are not believed, if they come and they say that your husband died, but we said before they are 100% believed to bring a get and to say, b'fanai nichtav, b'fanai nichtam, even though that edus b'fanai nichtam was necessary in order to honor the get, they're believed. So over here, where the woman is believed about herself to say, my husband died. So lo kol shekein, eno din shine emenet lavi gita. So for sure, she should be allowed to bring her own get. So, nashim sha'amru chachamim, hu delo mehemne. Listen to what Rabbi Akiva is saying. Listen closely, and you'll see what he's saying. He says that the only people that would not be believed are five women. But otherwise, they would be believed. Isn't that what clearly he's saying over here as part of his Kal V'chomer? So how could Rabbi Akiva have possibly said that we do not accept the Edus of Anisha? Well, I understand what the problem is. Didn't we just explain in this Mishnah that because of Rabbi Akiva's meeting with the Slechem Ish Beit Eli and his subsequent saying over testimony about that meeting to Rabbi Gamliel of Yavne, that everything changed, right? And I mean, all along, this whole Mishnah has been bringing out the sense of the development of this halacha. So what's the problem? Lo kasha, the Mishnah is saying what Rabbi Akiva held before. Hichziku liot masin al piedach ratzon al pi shabbat. That's how the Mishnah ends. Masha'en came over here. What Rabbi Akiva was saying is once that was established already. That if we're, and if indeed, says Rabbi Akiva, if that's what we're establishing, so then it follows that we're also certainly going to believe the idea of the get of this, of a woman. Fine. And now we have another glorious opportunity for, even though the Talis Kurtikov is Talis, I don't know, maybe it just was Anova, but we're ready to hear closing words. Anyway, so Rabbi Akiva said, what he thought is that we will not accept an Edus of Isha. But they attacked Rabbi Akiva when he said that. And again, this is here in order for us to know the whole sequence of events. So obviously this is not Nogay anymore because we just said Rabbi Akiva accepted the change in Hirziku. But we want to know what happened in the interim when Rabbi Akiva Gufa was the one who stood for the Chumrah of not marrying a woman like that. So they said to Rabbi Akiva, how is it possible that you're telling us that we do not believe an Edus of an Isha or an Eved and so on? Wasn't there a famous Maisa of these B'nai Levi where they had gone to Tzohar, Yir HaTimarim, and of course, here too, Rabarnea can give us the information straight from his local neighborhood. How many, if he's not sleeping, how many times did you daven in Tzohar, Yir HaTimarim? That is the important question today.
Drove near it, but didn't enter it, unfortunately. Looking forward.
And can you tell us precisely the location of Tzohar Yir HaTimarim?
South of the Dead Sea, and there's some of the most fascinating finds ever. There's a cemetery there from the time of the Mishnah and Gemara, and the tombstones are dated by the year of Bria Sa'olam and Shana Shemitah.
Marvelous. See? It was worth asking. And is Tzohar Yir HaTimarim related in any way to Tzohar Yir HaYayin Misheshes Yumei Bereshis Shenitman Sham?
I wasn't familiar with Sarah being Ibi Yir HaYayin Shenitman. It's fascinating.
Does it have anything to do with Lot, is what I'm asking, which was the five
cities? Yes. Yeah. And it's also fascinating. That's counterpoint to Yericho. In other words, they're both famous for Tzohar.
So this is the original Tzohar, you're saying?
Yes.
Okay. That's what I wanted to know.
Yeah.
Now, I
so
can
when
tell
Moshe
you.
Was looking, and he's doing a panorama at Sayer, he's looking to his left.
I can tell you, Maisa Shohaya, where I was driving through the back mountains of Ohio, where I had once taken my family to visit my in-laws. So I took a scenic route on the way back, and I was utterly shocked to drive through the town of Tzohar, Ohio. Tzohar, I mean, I know they like biblical names, you know, where we've been driving through Jerusalem, Hebron, and that's fine, but Tzohar was a little
Akron.
Bit strange.
Akron is Akron.
Oh, there we go. So this is all Ohio kind of stuff. So anyway, okay, so I thought, so maybe it's named after something else. As I drive down the main street of maybe 100 people, there is Lot's Hotel. Oh my gosh. We know how this guy, how this town makes a living, right? Anyway, so about a week later, this is the craziest story. A week later, so my son at that time had started university in Debrecen, Hungary, right? So he was going to medical school. Okay.
Debrecen's where I'm from.
I know. So we went to be close to the Rebbe's family and so on. So he went to Debrecen. Okay. So he says to me, you'll never guess what happened. He was with us. So he says, I meet this guy from the States who is a student in Debrecen, learning in my class, learning medicine. All right, so where do you come from? So he said, yeah, I come from Ohio. Well, we're in Ohio. You'll never know. Tell me, Tzohar. Oh, gosh. Just there last week. Guy flipped out. Anyway, amazing. So This was the Maisa and Soar Yirat HaMorim. And one of these people had gotten sick while they were traveling. And they brought him, they needed to continue going. So they brought him to Lot's Inn. And on their way back, they stopped to pick up their sick friend who wasn't able to complete the trip. So they stop in at the inn and they say, what happened to our friend? And she says, he died. I buried him. And they mutilized her testimony to marry his wife. Now, you, Rabbi Akiva, who claim that we cannot trust a woman to tell us, you're telling me that an Italian woman, maybe a Kohenet, she, we won't believe, she's not as good as a Pundakit? And Gemara's going to ask, well, what's so bad about a Pundakit? But anyway, is that what you're going to tell me? It's outrageous. Lote Kohenet ke Pundakit. So Rabbi Akiva said to them, listen, the day that she gets to be like this Pundakit, that's the day I'll believe her. That's one approach. The other approach is, when the Pundakit will be Ne'emenet, then I'll believe her. But there was no way that this Pundakit was believed. Now, what really happened, as we'll see, supports both of the approaches. It's just a question of how to phrase it. Because basically, they did not believe the Pundakit directly. She was believed because of all types of other issues, and I would have believed a woman under the same circumstances. She went in and Otziela Maklov Tarmilov Sefer Torah Shaya Bayado. She had his backpack. She had a Sefer Torah that he had with him. She brings out his Makel, and basically that is why we believed that he had died. Sounds very much like some other Maisa about believing the identification about, all right. So also some kind of Yibum story. Anyway.
And Tamarim?
Where's the Tamarim?
Tamar.
The Tarmil, you mean?
No, it's Irat Tamarim.
Why it went back to the Tamarim. Okay, I hear you. All right, very good. Very sweet. Wow. Okay, anyway, that's why she was believed, but not because of her per se. Now, first of all, Esther Gemara, what is so bad? I mean, what kind of prejudice is this? Well, if you're going to believe a Pundakit, is something wrong with being a Pundakit? Migrate you to the Pundakit. Of course, we know that the Targum of Rachav Ishzona was a Pundakit, but okay, we'll exclude that. So my griuta, the Pundakit, Amr of Kahana, it's talking about a non-Jew. She was Stama. Well, that's what it means. Once you walked into a hotel, some goyish hotel keeper, you believe her, and you're not going to believe this Kohenet. Pundakit ovedet kochavim aita. But the reason that it was believable was because, as we said before, misi chalafi tuma, we had the idea yesterday, that when someone is simply making a wholesome statement that is completely innocent, has no intent on achieving anything, she's talking about what happened. So, and then what she said, Zemaklo, Zetarmilo, Zekever, Shekavartivbo, and the same thing, Abamari, Breder of Binyumi Barchia, also when he explained it, he explained, by the way, the mitzvah over here was that she was a Pundakit Overet Kochavim. They believed her because she was basically Chalafi Tuma, and she said, Zemaklo, Zetarmilo, Zekever, Shekavartivbo. Wait a minute. Mesiach Lefitumo, by definition, means that she was not being put into a corner where she needed to say something. That's Lefituma. Lefituma made an innocent statement. Like, you know, what do you want from me, man? I'm just telling you. I mean, over here, you get, what do you want from me? They asked her. We left somebody here, and now he's not here. What happened? So she had to say something. What if we call the cops? I don't know. I mean, like, what? How could you call that a innocent statement when it's a direct response to the question of Ayei Chaveirenu? And we even mention the whole story that we asked her, Ayei Chaveirenu. Now, you don't understand what happened, okay? I'm giving you the background. They walked into this hotel. This woman bursts out crying as soon as she sees us. And she's like really devastated by the whole story. She said, oh, it's terrible. You left the guy here and he took a turn for the worse. I had to bury him myself. There's nobody. It was a disaster. So that is not, she didn't say that. I mean, she burst into tears before anybody said a thing. And then we asked her, so what happened? What happened? And then she said, Mate Kavartiv. So even though we answered to a direct question, the Tosis brings the Lashon of Yerushalmi is that it's as if it was Mesiach Levi. It wasn't really that the statement is Mesiach Levi Tuma, but the context creates the equivalent of as if Mesiach Levi Tuma, in which case the Gemara is adding here a whole new understanding of what it meant when it says that we rely on Mesiach Levi Tuma. By the way, remember that we've seen that issue before, according to Rabbi Yehuda. Remember the idea of the woman looking distraught, the emotive context of the statement, and so on, is oftentimes taken into consideration over here, even though we don't paskin like that, but that was the shita of Rabbi Yehuda. Okay, now the question is well known, the Torah is mechaye v'dorashta v'chakarta. There's a tremendous series of careful investigations that need to be made on a witness. Besides the simple determination of the time and the place and things like that, there's also these entrapment questions. We always try to make sure that we've asked whatever we could ask that would maybe in a cross-examination, trip up a witness. There's a lot of discussion of this that we had in Sanhedrin, and we'll have again Bezos Hashem in Sanhedrin. But anyway, the question is, does any of that apply to the Edom over here? So, Tana Rabbah, Ma'aseh ba'adam echad shebo'al ha'id ala isha lifnei Rabbi Tarfon. And Rabbi Tarfon says to him, B'ni, hech ata yodea be'edut isha zu? How did you come to know what happened to her husband? Well, he says, Anivu, you know, we were traveling together on the road, and all of a sudden, Radafacharinu Gayas, we got these enemy soldiers to start chasing us. And this guy, I couldn't believe it. He grabs a Yichur Shel Zayit. I mean, that's a thick branch. He rips the branch off of the tree, turns around, brandishing this branch, and all of you are Isaac and Shimshon, Agibar, Moshe Andel, and all those. He grabs this Yichur Shel Te'ina, and he beats off this entire Gayas with this Yichur Shel Te'ina, smashing them, whammo, whoppo, bang, until finally they run away.
Zayit.
What did I say?
Te'ina.
Oh, I'm so sorry.
Is there another Girsa?
No, I have no idea why he said that. You know, things happen when you get older. Richie, tell them about it, will you? Anyway, so I turn around.
You're thinking about that.
It's good to have some support. Anyway, so I turn around and I tell the guy, my God, you lion. Where is Ari when you need him, for heaven's sakes? What's going on over here? Naftali, today is the day that you allow Ari not to show up?
Hiding in the corner.
Oh, my gosh. Anyway.
This is the opposite of a Goyish.
There he is. Okay.
He offered them an olive branch, but boy, was it.
Right. So I said to him, lion. Not lion cub, but a real lion. A tokolosh is nothing compared to this. So I say to him, lion. Yasher kochacha. Man, oh, man. That's the way a Jew should be, let me tell you. So he says to me, hey, how the heck do you know that I'm called lion? That's exactly what they call me.
Rabbi, Rashi's gear says Te'ena. That's why Rashi said Te'ena.
Ah.
Look at Rashi.
You're saying Rashi said Te'ena because he heard me say Te'ena.
Yeah, the whole
That's why Rashi said Te'ena. Okay,
all
great.
The Gemara's wish. They reconfigured.
Excellent. Okay. So it's not as bad as I thought. Okay. So now I know why I said to Ina. Anyway, so he said, wow, how'd you know that that's my name? Kach korimoti b'iri. That's what my name is. Yochanan Barabi Yonatan Aryeh. That's me. Mr. Lion from Kvar Shichaya. Anyway, a terrible thing because this lion, incredibly, became sick, and he died. And on that basis, Hesira bitarfon et ishta. So, apparently, I'm going to see from here, that there was no drisha. I wasn't talking to you, sorry. Will you please shut up? So, welcome. So, anyway... Anyway, you see that Rabbi Tarfon asked no questions. I asked no questions. Tell me no lies. So apparently part of the whole takana that we're going to believe a person as an aid for Edus Isha includes that we're not going to try to confuse him, right? In which case you're telling me that Rabbi Tarfon does not require Drisha V'chakira, but that's not true. There's another price, huh? Ma'aseh adam echad sheba lifnei Rabbi Tarfon le'ha'id edut isha. And he said to him, Bni, eich ata yodea edut zo? And he said, I'll tell you. Ani v'hu ayinu olchim baderach. We were on the road, and a guy chased us, and he grabs, maybe Rashi was referring to this case, Barnea, instead of the earlier case. V'nitla b'yichur shel te'enau fishacho. He grabs this thick branch, breaks it off, fights off the entire gayas, and I say to him, lion, yasher kochacha, omar li, yofek ivanta l'shmi, exactly. That is indeed what everybody calls me back home. Shekach korimot yibiri, Yochanan ben Yonatan, lion from Kfar Shichaya. And then he died. So now in this version, Rabbi Tarfon says to him, okay, so let me just get this straight over here. You said to me that his name is Yochanan ben Yonatan from the village of Shichaya Aryeh? No, I didn't say that. What's wrong with you? Yochanan ben Yonatan Aryeh from Kfar Shichaya. Anyway, Rabbi Tarfon kept trying to get him confused. Okay, so that was Yonatan ben Yochanan. No, it was Yochanan ben Yonatan. Anyway, he couldn't confuse him, but he did try to confuse him. So you see that he put him through cross-examination, right? So does Rabbi Tarfon require Drisha V'chakira or does he not? Answers the Gemara, indeed, it's a machlokas tannoim, and apparently there was a change in Rabbi Tarfon in how it is, whether he paskins like Tana A or Tana B. Here's where it says, Beferish, Ein botkin in Raita, Ein botkin ede nashim b'drisha v'chakira, divi Rabbi Akiva, and Rabbi Tarfon Omer Botkin. And so apparently there were two shittas about how Rabbi Tarfon was paskening. And the machlokas is dependent on what? Rabbi Chanina. How do we view Edut Isha? The Omer Rabbi Chanina, Dvar Torah. Look, even though we have these big differences between Dine Mominus and Dine Nefashis, that is not a deraisa, gentlemen. It's only that the Rabbanan utilized the Keach of Hefker, Bezdin, Hefker. And I'll tell you why. The Torah says, Drisha V'chakira, I don't care whether it says that in Ogea, Edus of Avodah Zorah, whatever. Because the Torah says, Beferish, Mishpat, Echad, Yelachem. And that's in the context of exactly the halacha of the difference between Dine Mominus and Dine Nefashis. Makeh Be'ema Yishalmena, Umakeh Adam Yumat, and then Mishpat Echad Yelachem. So in other words, it doesn't matter whether we're talking about paying money for killing someone's animal or a case that involves capital punishment where somebody shot someone. You require Mishpat Echad. So then how is it that the Chachomim say that when it comes to Dine Mamanut, Ein Tzrichim Drisha V'chakira? Because they made a takana based on Hefker, Bezdin, Hefker. Why? Because who in the world is going to lend money if they have to rely on witnesses? They're going to need to go through Drisha V'chakira. 90% of people get confused enough to contradict themselves in some way, and therefore I'm not going to have witnesses. I'm not going to lend anybody money. You got to be crazy. So in order, shalotin ol delet b'fnei lovim, we have to have normal business practices. I mean, and therefore, we will utilize our koyach of Bezdin in this case. So, okay, so now what's the machlokas? How does that have to do with over here? Because Marsav Arkimedika Ketuvah L'Mishkal, remember we were Derech the Ketuvah before, right? Wherever we're going to be Matir, the woman to marry. So it says in the Sefer HaKetubah that based on that, when you get a heter to marry, then you collect this ketubah. So, okay, so it boils down to dinei momonos. And dinei momonos, we made a takana. You do not need drisha v'chakira. Masha'en ke marsar, but given the karshavdin and eshet ish li'alma, and that is an issur nefashos, so then it's kidinei nefashot. So we were machmer on it the way that we would be machmer with dinei nefashot. Okay. Some take this literally, which is a little bit strange, because obviously, I mean, just because there's also a ksuva, it doesn't mean that we're not dealing with dinei nefashos, which the Besdin cannot. So if you take it literally and not a question of, look, this whole thing is a completely different din of Ne'amonis, it's not really Eidus, et cetera, then it's a sort of a metaphorical issue. So in other words, in what category did we put it? What set of issues? How should we treat it? But if you take it mamish literally, like the Ritva does, the Ramban does, talk about the fact that Bizman Hazeh, it only involves mamonis because there's no din of Misa. So then that would be the way to look at it. So in which case, it wouldn't be talking about the underlying issue. Okay, otherwise you understand it to be what did the Rabbanan use to pattern their Gezerah on.